Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you living in flow? How does it feel? What does flow feel like? Are you getting the results of living in flow? What does that mean? So we're going to talk about that with the author of a book called Living in Flow, The Science of Synchronicity and How Your Choices Shape Your World. Very exciting. And so to help us know how to live in flow better is the author of the book, Sky Nelson Isaacs. Sky, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be on the show.
I'm so glad to talk about this with you because the more we can live in flow, the more fulfilled we can be. Because I think because we're following the flow. And well, let's assume that the flow is taking us in good directions, okay? So, and the flow has brought you to writing this book and what you're here for. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got to this place?
Well, it's interesting that you use the word flow in the right, in a good direction. My experience with being in flow and what I think is driving the synchronicities that show up in life to get us into flow is not necessarily good directions, but directions toward healing and towards growth and towards evolution. So we're constantly, the reason to allow ourselves to live in flow is because one, it feels wholesome because we are fully engaged in the present moment. We're fully engaged in what we're doing, and our meta thoughts about worries about what we should be doing or what else, what's going to happen when we can't pay our rent next month or whatever, those things go out the window because in the moment, doing the activity we're doing, we're engaged. But it doesn't necessarily always lead to desirable, you know, the kind of things we want to experience. For instance, I talk a lot about this in my book, authentic feelings such as grief are a form of flow. And being willing to be in flow enough to go into those experiences is very healing, can be very healing, and can transform us, can allow us to get then with flow into the next thing, which might be some new form of joy that's been released having felt our grief. So flow for me is really an experience of authenticness, authenticity that emerges. And synchronicity shows up in life as a way in which the cosmos is responding to our choices. And it allows us to get into flow. When we pay attention to the synchronicities that happen in our life, they help us realign ourselves with our own flow and where our healing or our growth lies.
One of the things you talk about in the book is that the universe is not a friendly universe. They're a neutral universe that responds to us. So if we're friendly, the universe might feel a lot friendlier. And so the idea is this authenticity is about knowing our authentic selves in the best way possible to see what we're mirroring. What is it that the universe is responding to about our purpose, who we believe we are, what we believe our purpose is, you know, what we want in the deeper sense of our beingness, our soul purpose and a higher outcome, which is what you were talking about, is evolution. And how do we get to evolution? And often it's a twisty path. You say in the book that this isn't, living in synchronicity isn't about walking across an easy path. It's more like climbing a mountain pass.
Right, with boulders on one side and a cliff on the other side.
Right.
You gotta step carefully.
Finding the right handholds and footholds.
I find that there's a real sense in my life, a sense of justice. When I finally see clearly on a situation, I can usually say, oh, I see what I did that allowed that situation to happen. And sometimes it's a good situation that I created a great event or I had a good talk with somebody that really changed our relationship. And sometimes it's a not a constructive thing where I create a situation where I have the same challenges at work or the same conflict with my daughter or whatever. And if I gain enough perspective, I often see that, yes, indeed, there's a justice to how the universe is sending me signals, a reflection of my own choices.
But what about the idea that where you see that the bad guys are winning? How do you see synchronicity and flow that gives, you know, bad guys the opportunity to harm people?
I don't know the answer to that. What I try and focus on is the personal experience that I have and that other people have individually. In science, we have a practice of tackling a problem by looking at the simplest problem first. So if you want to understand the flight of jets in the air, first you tackle basic thermodynamics of, you know, a piece of paper floating on water or something. You look at the very basic situation first, and once you understand that, you can then start to complicate things. I don't think we understand very much at all about synchronicity. And so the first step in my life is, in my studies, is to try and understand in my direct experience and in the experience of people I talk to, in our direct experience, and not even with the really difficult things, not with, you know, someone got ill and is that somehow tied to their choices or is it their fault? I don't entertain those questions. I look at the daily ups and downs of my life that are influenced by and seem to be influenced by the choices that I make, and how can I learn from those experiences and the responsiveness of the cosmos.
Right. And I found in my life so many times, whatever the conflict is, there's a way to win in the long run. Mm-hmm. I've lost a lot of battles in my life, but I've basically won the wars. Mm-hmm. I like to say many times in my life, I've been the last man standing. I think it's really about who we know we are, so we can tackle things authentically from our own strengths and knowing our own weaknesses. So if we understand them, our strategies will be in line with whatever we're facing, you know, and especially if we know our weaknesses, then we can get out of the way of them, or we can honor them, because our motives have so much to do with everything, and we have both conscious and unconscious motives. We have conditioning, we have fears of failure, fears of success, and a lot of times we get in our own way not realizing it. And really, you know, we might have a motive, but it's not authentic enough to really carry us, because it has some, you know, neurotic problems to it.
Well, I think that we often think that we understand the purpose of life, and so then it feels unfair when things go wrong. I think life is filled with problems, and maybe I don't understand the real purpose of what I'm here to do. If what I'm here to do is to grow and learn, and to heal from woundings that I had when I was younger, and to become a fuller, more authentic expression of who I am, then I can see a lot of the challenges that I've faced in my life. Like you said, winning the war, but losing the battle. You know, having an event or a situation or a relationship that doesn't go well because of something that I was involved with. But the deeper question is, what do I learn about how to express myself? What do I learn about how to understand my patterns differently? And that's the war that we come out at the end if we're lucky, or if we, you know, a successful life is one where we come at the end having learned those things we needed to learn, even though we lost a lot of battles along the way. The more challenges I take on, the more battles I lose. And I find myself right now especially just filled with dropped balls and battles lost. But there's a sense in which if my growth and my understanding is increasing the whole time, then I'm becoming more capable of dealing with harder and harder things.
I think it's understanding what the end game is. Mm-hmm. You know, that we're bounced around a lot in life. We're not in control of everything. The idea of controlling things is very clear in your book that we can't.
Yeah.
But we can control our purpose, our meaning, our values, and be true to them, and a higher purpose. And I think synchronicity works best when we are kind of working for the good of all. Because I know a lot of very selfish people who have a lot of failure in their lives because they're only looking out for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And the universe, I don't think the universe supports that well enough.
That's a tough one to tackle. I mean, and maybe we won't get too far in that, but I do find that I feel like I'm pretty selfish because I focus a lot on things that are of great interest to me. But I do that with an intention of being of service. So I think it may be less about what we do and more about how we do it and how we interact with people and learn from people and are open-minded and willing to listen.
I wouldn't criticize self-care. Mm-hmm. And you have a family, you know, you're responsible for your daughter. You know, you have things that are priorities.
Right.
And the universe takes care of that. I remember when my kids were going off to college, or one went to college and one had to go to a private school because he wasn't a good student. And it became financially really difficult. And the universe came through. Mm. You know, somehow those were years that I was able to really handle high costs. And then when they were done with school, things quieted down more. Intense income. And everything, you know, it's been fine. But I was amazed at how, you know, it's called, you know, like building it and they will come. When you build a family and the family has needs, somehow, you know, there are ways of wiggling through life that make it work.
Well, and this is what I think is so useful about the dynamic of living in flow and seeing synchronicity in life, is that we are not simply here to accomplish what we think we're here to accomplish. We are actually here to do much more broadly, much more than that, and have a broadly applicable set of experiences. And so when I'm focused on, you know, trying to get my book out there, I'm also realizing that I might be dropping the ball on my daughter, and there's I've got the capacity to do all of these things, or to have my relationship with my wife, or have you know, experience playing music that's fulfilling in my music life. And all of these things are actually important. So flow is about having all of that, being a whole person.
Yeah, but we can't be idealistic. There are a lot of families I work with where children have at least one bad parent, maybe two, and they get greatly harmed, even now with our government doing very harmful things to children. And we you know, it's hard to believe that it's, you know, that humanity can behave that way, but humanity does. And what does that mean? And I do believe in soul purpose, that our souls come here knowing the obstacles they're going to face, and we're basically asked, are you willing to do this? And we kind of have to, I think on the other side, we're kind of not clear about how dense it is here and take on things that we're sorry about later.
Yeah.
But doesn't mean that we can't fulfill a greater purpose in spite of all of this. And just understanding that some souls have really come here in sacrifice, that, you know, they are going to be harmed or killed, or, you know, and somehow that serves a greater purpose for that soul as well as the rest of us to learn from and do a better job. Because I think evolution is all about refinement. And often to refine, we have to step backward and in order to step forward. And I think we're doing a lot of that right now. So it's understanding the patterns of flow and not trying to, you know, think that everything has to look rosy. It's just that, you know, we maybe our rose garden needs better fertilization, or, you know, we have to do something to the garden in important ways to get what we need, but we don't know that until we address it. And we can't address it if our minds aren't open to it, if we're in fear or even rage and anger and reaction can often limit our ability to find synchronicity.
Well, I think we can also look at, this is my hope, look at the bigger problems we face that seem intractable and see at the core of that behaviors in individual human beings, and not just in one human being. I mean, rarely is one human being's behaviors effective enough to, you know, throw off everybody else. It's really a collection of behaviors. And when I see people behaving in ways that I find reprehensible, I also can look inside and say, oh, there's a way in which it's a matter of degree. You know, it's right. Same thing to a matter of degree. And so yes, compassion is important, but compassion for the purpose of understanding, or I guess empathy is the right word, understanding why a person is behaving the way they are, because that allows us to put it in a context and actually see it as meaningful and see it as something that can be resolved.
Exactly. Well, it might not synchronicity be resolved easily.
But right. None of this is promised to be easy.
Right.
There's no part in my book that says the word easy to it. I mean, people talk about flow being ease, but it's ease of the sort that you have when you're like on a tightrope. You know, I can't say that I've ever been on a tightrope, but I don't think you can be up there without having a sense of relaxation and centeredness
and flow,
but complete concentration and sacrifice of distraction.
Well, you have something in your book called Lorax, L-O-R-R-A-X. And I thought that was very helpful because it's being open. Lorax, these are just, you know, letters for being, to listen, to be open, reflect, release, act, and repeat. And so very often we're not listening enough, or we don't know what we're listening to. If we don't have empathy, we don't know how to listen. And if we don't have compassion, and yet we still have to, I believe, be the universe in a sense of objectivity, and be clear that we have to create, like the universe is creative. We have to be creative, and find deeper patterns and deeper answers than what appears on the surface that can throw us off.
Well, let me tell you a story that illustrates the Lorax process. And this is an example of synchronicity that happened to me in my life to give your viewers an idea of what we're talking about. So I went to a conference at a local center, conference area that had a couple of different groups of people on campus at the same time. And we were on break that evening and my friend and I decided to go use the hot tub. It was a cold night in the middle of winter in California, so it's, you know, it's a little chilly. And I get my bathing suit on and I walk out in the cold air, and my friend comes back from the hot tub and says, it's broken. So here's the start of the Lorax process. Listen. Listen to my friend, or really listen to the experience. Pause and notice what's going on in the experience. And so what I noticed in myself was a reaction. I had resistance. I was cold. I wanted to have a hot tub. I was ready to relax. And now all I wanted to do was go cuddle up in my bed and read a book and go to sleep. So that was my response to the listening. But I, right at that moment, somebody across the darkened quad area said, sort of to me directly, to the group, but I sort of felt them talking to me, you should come talk with our group. We're having a gathering, a social gathering in the meeting hall right here, and you should come hang out with us. I think you'd really get along with what we're talking about. And I was caught off guard. So I listened to that as well and digested that. And I had to open my mind because what I wanted to do was go read a book quietly and be introverted. But what I was being called to do was go be with a whole bunch of strangers and talk about the stuff I talk, I'm interested in, and hear what they're up to. So that was a pretty hard decision. But I reflected in the next step, I reflected on what my real intentions are with being at this conference and in the world right now. And that was to get more exposure, meet more people, and ultimately get more chances to speak to larger groups of people. And that wasn't going to happen if I went back to my hotel room and read a book, you know. So I decided to, I had to release my attachment to what I wanted to do. And then from there, I was able to act. And the action step is fifth, right? After you've done all this reflection on what's happening. And the choice I made was to go get dressed and come back and go join the group. And as it turns out, first thing when I walked in, the person said, oh, you should go meet John. He's over there. He's a physicist. I didn't get to meet John until the very end of the night. It's like everyone else has filtered out. And finally, I'm up against meeting John and we're talking. And it turns out we have this great connection. He's really interested in what I'm talking about with flow and synchronicity. And we exchange numbers. He says, I'd love to have you come speak at my group sometime. So fast forward 2 months, and I get a call or an email, I guess it was, from a friend from another organization who says, we'd love to have you come speak at this business organization. And we have, your name came up because John said he knew you. And this is my friend who they knew each other. They're on the board of this group.
And this couldn't happen unless the hot tub broke down.
Right. That's it. So the obstacles that show up in life are there.
Opportunities.
Are opportunities. And they're to challenge us and to help us grow. And
that's a wonderful attitude to have about every time that, you know, we're blocked. Know that the universe is not against us. They're not for us or against us, but they are responsive to our mind, our meaning, our feelings, our purpose. And that's how quantum mechanics works. And you bring that into the book a lot, is that the physical universe is actually responsive and is alive due to our presence. And so it's reflecting us. And so if we know that the universe, that the physical universe, as quantum physics sees it, is responsive to us being there in our consciousness, so that our consciousness needs to be more and more responsible about it.
Well, let me dig a little deeper into that.
Sure.
Because quantum mechanics has brought up a lot to try and understand some of these connections to consciousness. And I really go into detail. And my research in my professional life is doing this kind of trying to connect spirituality or basic principles in consciousness with physics. And the way that I do that is ultimately saying we are experiencing things. Experience is the basic currency that we're dealing with. And the physical world arises out of experience, which is essentially what Schrodinger and Heisenberg and Bohr came to when they developed quantum mechanics. But their focus was on microscopic experiments, like with electrons, saying that when you make a measurement of a system, it's not enough to just describe the system and its options, the options that it can land in when you measure it. It's also necessary to describe the one doing the measuring. And it's the combination of those two things that determines which possibilities are available and which one it ultimately lands in. So the challenge for someone like me is to extend that to the macroscopic level so that we can understand how something like synchronicity with macroscopic objects can emerge. And that's the work that I do. It turns out that the mathematics of quantum mechanics applies at all scales. There's no limitation that says it shouldn't apply to everyday objects.
Right.
But what we did early on was we said, well, obviously it doesn't apply to everyday objects, because in the atom, you can have an electron occupying a superposition of two different possible states at one time. But you, on sitting in your chair, are not occupying two different possible states at once. You're in one state all the time, and everything you've ever observed is in one state. So we automatically said, well, clearly quantum mechanics doesn't apply, and we spent decades, if not almost a century now, trying to explain why quantum mechanics doesn't apply to the everyday world. But the question is really not does it apply, but if it does apply, what would it look like? Here's what quantum mechanics is. Quantum mechanics is a study of what the world is doing when we're not watching it. So how do we know what it's doing when we're not watching it? We don't know what an electron is doing when we're not observing it, and we don't know what the chair behind me is doing when I'm not observing it. So when we start looking at what we should really observe in the world, I think we find that synchronicity is the evidence, is one of the pieces of evidence that indicates that there is a flexibility to the reality of things you observe. When you're not observing something in the world, like everything outside these four walls, it's evolving into all sorts of possibilities. And the model I use for that is a tree that comes straight out of quantum mechanics. A tree of possibilities that emerges from all the choices that could be made, all the possibilities.
Right. And we're going to talk about that hopefully in another show, because we're running out of time. And there's so much about this that lends to more conversation. It's really, on a larger scale, it's our presence that the universe is very responsive to. And so we have to be responsible for our presence and our purpose. And so let's have a purpose of people reading Living in Flow, The Science of Synchronicity and How Your Choices Shape Your World. Your name is Sky Nelson Isaacs. Where can people go for more?
I have a website at livinginflowbook.com. And I am developing a course right now to support the book and to help people go deeper into the topics in the book. The course is intended for people in the places that they feel blocked or disempowered to see the synchronistic gateways that are in front of them every day, the little opportunities.
That's a great opportunity, yes.
Yeah, the little opportunities to make a difference in their life and to step forward into flow.
I'm so glad you're doing that. Wonderful. So, Sky, thanks so much for being on Energy Stew, and hopefully we can talk soon again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks. Appreciate it, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.fm. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.